The city of Gotham gives rise to villains and darkness. Heroes and defenders of justice will rise up. The villains have chosen their dark path.
Our heroes made the choice of truth over personal happiness, and we have chosen to document it all. We are here to tell their stories. We are Gotham Undercover.
Okay, all right. I can do this. Okay, I'm John, aka the Silver Fox. It's gonna be tough for me.
Yes, indeedy. And I'm Jeff X-Force 11, and welcome to Gotham Undercover.
We are part of the Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network. You can find us at goldenspiralmedia.com or search out the show's Facebook page at Gotham Undercover. Jeff, why are we here?
Well, folks, we've had some technical difficulties along the way that have held us back, and we apologize for the delay, but man, we wanted to make sure that we got all the epicness of this season finale, got all your feedback in for the season finale, and unfortunately, we are missing our Scarlet Cougar. She ran into some health issues last night. So John and I are going to cover the finale today, but we do want your thoughts on the series as a whole. And what we're going to do is Karen and I are going to get together in a couple weeks and do kind of a series wrap up with your thoughts and our thoughts and kind of close things out as far as Gotham goes. So please get in your feedback about that and do keep the Scarlet Cougar in your thoughts and prayers as we hope that she's back up to speed very soon.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Pleasure to be along with you here to wrap this up. And trust me, folks, we've tried every which way from left to right, up, down to make sure that we could include her. And so hopefully this is going to be the best plan to ensure that that happens.
That's right. All right. Today, we're going to be talking about The Beginning. Now, this episode was written by John Stevens, who's a Gotham EP, and he's a co-creator with Danny Cannon on the upcoming series on the DC Universe streaming service called Metropolis, which kind of looks at the beginnings of Superman and the beginnings as far as his time in Metropolis goes. Now, there's not a firm release date on that, but it's going to be upcoming maybe in 2020. And that sounds exciting from what I've seen of it. So, but we're happy John wrote this episode, and this episode was directed by none other than Stabby Babs herself, Erin Richards. Now, this is her second episode as a director, and I think she did a really good job.
Absolutely. And I gotta say, I'm a little shocked that they would, you know, kind of put this episode in her hands, but,
right.
I mean, and nothing against her. It's just, you know, with the level of experience, you would think that they would bring in, you know, a fairly well-known experienced director and all that. But no, you know, just hand it off to Babs and, you know, see what comes out.
Yep. Yes, indeed. All right, John, let's talk about ratings. What did you give this episode?
So I gave this episode 9.5 times that I've pretended to be brain dead.
Oh, yeah. And I gave it a little less. I gave it 9.3 bat signals. Mm. And for me, the reason was, and we'll get into this, I enjoyed this episode. I enjoyed things that I saw. But for me, like we said last time, I think that the last episode was a better series finale. I said in the blog post that I felt like this felt like a coda, you know, one of the things that you see maybe at the end of the Lord of the Rings, where you see some wrap up, it gave us a picture of what's going to happen down the road. But as far as closing out those characters, I felt like that the last episode gave us a little better closure to the series. And this is like, okay, we're going to just give you a little hint of what's going to come. And not that I didn't appreciate this episode, I just felt like that one felt more of a character closeout than this one. And that's why I took it down a couple of sub points.
Yeah. Well, and truly that's my half point as well, is that in order to do justice to, you know, to get through all of these different storylines and all these different characters, I just felt like 2 hours just sort of had to be the standard.
Yeah, I agree.
And that's what I felt in this, is that there was so much ground they were trying to cover that everything felt just a little bit shortened, and everything felt just a little bit too neatly wrapped up, if you will. And I understand. I mean, this is a universe that's going to go on, you know, for 80 years. And so at what point do you kind of draw the line? And yeah, you know, I mean, I get that. But in order to give this series the justice that they've done so well this whole time, I really felt like 2 hours just should have been the order for it.
I agree. I do. And so, so this episode, the story points, I wasn't very inventive on these, but we have our, and these are not really A, B, C, but these are kind of the order we're going to discuss them in. So we have the beginning of the Penguin and the Riddler. We've got the beginning of the Joker, which Jeremiah, Echo, Babs, Barbara Lee, and Jim. And then we have the beginning of the Bat family with Batman, Catwoman, Alfred, and Lucius Fox. So I just felt like they all kind of mingled in together in this episode. So let's talk about the Penguin and the Riddler, because things have not been very pleasant for Oswald and Ed in these 10 years. So it's, they've both been in prison, but both in separate prisons. So the Penguin's been in Blackgate and Riddler's been in Arkham for 10 years. And we see Penguin being released and Riddler being sprung. So what did you think about this?
I loved that Oswald came out in that Penguin kind of form, right? I mean, that was so great. And then getting ready to leave with the top hat and everything. I mean, it was, I mean, again, as far as the technicals and as far as the visualizations of the show, I mean, this was a perfect Batman comic book. I mean, it was, all the images were there, all of them. So the other interesting thing that I really found in this was that Ed, I guess he's in Arkham because of the two personalities, right? But I mean, and that's the difference between he and Penguin.
Yeah,
but
I'm guessing that that's the case. It seemed to me that he would be a better fit for Arkham because of those personalities, and that Blackgate just doesn't have the capabilities to handle somebody like him, and Arkham does.
So, you know, it's just him. You know, come facing the news that the Penguin was getting out, and you can just tell that he's still kind of running things there at Arkham. And you know, this 10 years has been a kind to him in a way that he's still very much has his faculties, very much is still on top of his game.
Indeed. And so he is sprung from Arkham, and he is led to believe in various ways that it is Oswald that has sprung him. And so he gets out, he's given basically a blueprint of what to do. And so he has been given explosives. He's been given kind of a diagram to put Gotham in kind of a state of chaos with blowing up the new Wayne Tower He's kidnapped Mayor James again. And I'm like, Gotham, come on. We saw in the last episode that they had a different mayor, but, you know, they're like, I guess they just rotate around and they're like, well, we haven't had Mayor James in a while. Let's go for him. And, you know, and I love it because he's all, Mayor James is all tied up with explosives and Ed's calling it a callback. Oh, so yeah, this was interesting. He's at the
and the suit too.
Oh, like, yeah. Oh yeah.
That's waiting for him as well. Yeah.
Yeah. And so he's got things all wired up at the Wayne Gala for the new, I don't know if they're calling it Wayne Enterprises, Wayne Tower, that Alfred has been faithful to keep things going and has got this new tower up and running, and Bruce is supposed to be there to present, and Ed is going to kind of steal his thunder and rain on his parade here. And it's very interesting that he is foiled by none other than Selina and Babs. Selina catches him after he's stealing a thing of appetizers. And these two powerful women kind of foil his plans. And I really enjoyed that.
It was very, very good.
Yeah, so we find out that you know, it was there in the midst of this plan. And like I said, they get foiled and they're trotting him out. You know, a little earlier, it seems that Penguin wants revenge on Jim, no matter what he says to the press. So he's kidnapped Jim and he's taken him down to the docks in kind of a turnabout of season one, and yeah. he's going to finish him down at the docks. Yet he just hasn't learned the lesson of, you know, maybe not do it right at the edge of the pier. I love this.
Well, and the fact that he's gotten shot off the docks too. I mean, it's kind of the irony is sweet, right?
Yeah, you know, he's taken him back to this seminal point of his character building and saying, you know, listen, it's because of, partly because of you and this point that I am who I am, and I'm going to end you here. But yet he forgets that Jim can just jump off into the water.
Too good. And Jim and the mustache too. I mean, it's just, yeah. You know,
I love that. You know, it's
quite a visual. Yeah.
Yeah. That mustache. I tell you. Jim escapes, and he's right before he jumps in the water, he kind of throws this whole idea of the explosives and things back in Oswald's face, and Oswald gives nothing. He would surely gloat over this whole explosives and things if it was his plan and there's no recognition there. So Jim knows it's not him. And so when he goes running after he gets cleaned up to Wayne Tower, just about the time that Barbara and Selina are bringing out Ed, and they discover these explosives under the model there. And I love this group interaction where each person has to play a part on disarming the explosives and figuring things out. We've got Lee using her surgeon hand. We've got Lucius figuring out that there's something up because the clock tower is the old version of the clock tower. I just love that because it takes this entire group to kind of save the day.
Well, and plus it's got the instrument on it that you have to keep it upright.
Right.
Which I thought was an added touch that, again, just was very, very cool. And I don't know, just an added thing that was made it that much more difficult. And I was like, that's really cool.
Yeah, I like that. And I like the fact, now we know this is Ed's doing, but he's going off the plans that he thought were Oswald's. But the interesting thing that I did not catch the first time, and it was a callback to season one, because in season one, Babs, her apartment, and evidently, I guess she kept it, her apartment was in the clock tower.
Oh.
And that's
very cool.
That's kind of what clued Jim to go to the clock tower, the new clock tower, because that's where Babs and Barbara Lee live. They, you know, I guess she decided to stay in the new clock tower, but that's their, the apartment that Jim and Babs were sharing was there in the clock tower in season one. And I'm just like, oh, I miss that. I miss that.
Fantastic.
So yeah, we have the bomb being shut off, and Jim was like, oh, I've got to get to my family here. And so he's running off. But before we kind of leave this, you know, this a little bit, I really appreciate it, and we'll, like I said, this all melds into things, but I really appreciate what Alfred has done to keep things going. He is standing up. He's making the announcement there at the gala. He and Selena have this interaction there. And we were speculating on last episode that, you know, maybe they kept in touch, and it sounds like there's been some way of being in touch, but not recently. And
yeah, see, I didn't get the sense at all.
Yeah,
like, I felt like this was the first time they had seen each other in maybe 10 years.
Don't know if it's been 10 years, but I think it's the first time that they have really talked. Like they may have seen each other, because it seems like, from what Barbara was saying, that Selena's kind of an up-and-coming person, like she's like a debutante, or she's in the social standings within Gotham. She's not a street-level person, but she is still operating in the shadows as Catwoman. But so Alfred may have seen her, but this is the first time that they've really interacted. And I appreciate the fact that Alfred really sees through to her and kind of addresses things with her and sees her motives. And that even though that there's been this time difference, he can really see her character and kind of addresses that. And so I really appreciated that Alfred is really on his game, even after 10 years of bearing all this weight.
Yeah, absolutely. When he says to her, so you came, you know, dressed to the nines to tell him to leave you alone. Yeah, that was like, oh, okay.
You know, and she brings up the fact that, yeah, he left us when we really needed him. And I appreciate that Alfred says, yes, you need to tell him that, because he feels the same way, but he realizes that he just doesn't have the same footing to tell Bruce that she does. And I appreciate that he can kind of say, yes, I agree with you, and you need to bring this up with him.
Yeah, deliver that message for us, would you?
We have been talking a little bit about Barbara. And so Barbara has just stepped it up. So she has snapped up real estate all across Gotham. She's become this real estate mogul. She's building a skyscraper that, when finished, it will be taller than Wayne Tower. And it seems like she's getting a happy ending that we kind of speculated that she wasn't going to get. And I just really appreciate this, because we all thought that she was going to have to sacrifice herself in some way to protect Barbara Lee and the city, but yet it seems like she has just grown and thrived in these 10 years. And that was very pleasant to see, and just very pleasant to see the relationship that she kind of has with her daughter, Barbara Lee, and the relationship that she has with Jim and raising Barbara Lee.
Well, it's even put in there that she's the queen of Gotham, mm-hmm. which is what she wanted when she was at the Sirens Club.
Right.
But this has so much better connotations because of what she has made herself into. And she still has all of the instincts and everything that made her character what it is, but right. she's turned it into something very legitimate and very, very much respected rather than feared.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, and I enjoyed that quite a bit.
Yeah, I did. And I appreciate this co-parenting that they've got going on, even with Lee, that it looks like that they share custody of Barbara Lee. They spend good time with each other. And so I really appreciate that. I enjoyed the scene there in Jim and Lee's house, of them kind of finishing up the day, and he's come in, he's shaved his mustache.
Yes.
But yet this married relationship that they have, of being able to debrief at the end of the day, and them talking about, you really see Lee wanting to be there for Jim and kind of talking through things with him, being that sounding board of, yeah, maybe if you do step down, somebody else will step up. And I just really appreciated their little back and forth and that scene of domesticity that they had, and that in that short scene, you get a picture of who they are as a couple. And that really hit well with me.
Yeah, and everything about Lee still seems the same as well.
Mm-hmm.
Which is, I mean, not that I expected otherwise, but they could have gone a number of different ways with it. But it seems like she's still very, very much her own person, and at the same time, a really great partner for mm-hmm. Jim.
Yeah. Yeah, and we don't really get a picture of all that she's doing. You know, obviously she's still practicing medicine and hopefully taking care of the folks in the Narrows with that. Mm-hmm. So I really appreciate that. You see the dilemma of Jim. He's weary because, you know, we've seen him for 5+ years of filling that role of Gotham's defender, because there was no Batman, and
right.
he's just gotten weary of it, and he's ready to step down and do something else. And I think it's out of the weariness, but I really appreciate that they brought him to this point, because you see that he just so tired. He's got good help. He's got the whole GCPD, but he's just bearing so much of the weight himself, and he needs help, and he just feels like he can't do it anymore on his own.
Mm-hmm. One of the things that I did note about this is that we see Harvey is essentially the very same. And I don't know if that was intentional,
mm-hmm.
like he just didn't grow, or he made it as far as long as his kind of redemption hero journey as he was going to get. But it was interesting choice to me that he was left basically in the exact same position, style, appearance, everything. So it's like I get the sense that he hasn't really grown at all. And I would think, given everything that he's experienced, and they didn't even call him Captain Bullock or anything. I mean, like, I don't know if that's happened. I don't know, you know, that he has any more responsibility than he had when it was Captain Gordon. So I don't know. I was a little bit sad for that.
Yeah, I was too. That's one of the reasons I kind of graded down on this episode too. Like you said, it really, if we had gotten a two-hour season finale. I would have liked to see more of his story, because I kind of assumed, because they were meeting with the mayor, that he was captain, rather than just a detective. Because you would think, if you've got a meeting with the commissioner and just a detective, why would that be? So I kind of assumed that he was the captain, but we just didn't get a picture of who he is. And I know that he kind of is consistent to the character. Maybe he's a little more jaded in the comics, you know, when Batman's around. But yeah, I would have liked to see more. And that's one of the reasons that I kind of graded it down, because I would have liked to see... We've got some good character beats with other characters, but not there. And he has become, Donald has just played him so well throughout this series. And I just wanted to see a little bit more of him and his life. And the same applies with Selina too. We got but not nearly what I would like to see. We've got this group here, and it seems like that things are going well for them, but then we have the intervention of the Riddler, and we come to find out that he is not acting on Oswald's request, but Jeremiah's. So Jeremiah has been in Arkham, and we don't know for how long, but he has been playing possum. And Echo has access to him, and is kind of, he's basically playing the, you know, the Don in the prison, where he's kind of orchestrating things, and Echo is his connection to the outside. So he's evidently still got some pull, because there's been these thefts of explosives. There's these, all these blueprints and plans laid out that Echo is getting to the Riddler, and he's kind of orchestrating things and, you know, keeping things from the public eye. But yet it comes to a certain point where he has to come outside of Arkham. And, this was just an interesting turn, because we see these prisoners basically stabbing him with forks and knives and no reaction. And then Echo comes in and says that, you know, the gig's up. They know our plans. And the switch is turned. And I'm like, oh my goodness, this is going to be interesting.
Yeah. So good to see Echo back again. I was very happy for that. Yeah, I love that Ed is kind of playing with him, and you know, just in his own way. Love that we got a little bit more progression with Jeremiah, and you know, is he going to become the Joker? Well, they still leave that up in the air, which I also love.
Yeah.
That could be not. And so this has been one of the things throughout the series, and I know we'll try not to tread on the entire series too much, but this has been, I think, one of the best rides of this series is this idea of the Joker and what's happened through that. And I'd love to explore that more as you guys kind of wrap up the whole thing.
I agree. It's been interesting how they've done it through the series. And Cameron has just done a very adept job at playing each of the characters. And we have this third inclination. He's not Jeremiah anymore, but he's not yet who he's going to be. And so he's been orchestrating things because he knows Bruce is back in town. Yeah. And the whole idea, he has been fixated on Bruce, and the whole idea is to call him out, to really push Bruce to become this worthy adversary. And so he set up this explosive, he set up this call out, and even orchestrating this kidnapping. He sends Jim to the clock tower to see that Babs and Barbara Lee aren't there. And he comes into the club and basically you know, gives this ultimatum. He was going to give an ultimatum through Babs to Jim anyway to get to Bruce, but he just finds this greater opportunity when, I love it, Barbara Lee is very much her mom and dad's daughter. Yeah. She is not content to see her mom in danger, so she's going to come in and stand up to this maniac looking guy, and I'm like, you go, girl. Yeah, this is a girl who could grow up to become Batwoman.
Well, Batgirl. I mean, you can imagine the bedtime story she's been hearing for the last 10 years, right? You know, yeah. And then once there was this time that, you know, Mommy and Penguin, they tried to kill each other. You know, I mean, you just, you know, fun times with Mom and Dad both trying to tell about their histories and stuff. I mean, what kind of conversation does that look like?
Yeah, because you kind of would imagine, like, you she'd get a version of the story from Babs that's a little more detailed. And then when Jim's telling it, she could say, but you're leaving out the good parts.
Oh, so. Like, well, Daddy was a police officer, so we didn't, we can't talk about that.
Oh, but yeah, we have here that Jay, we'll call him, has Barbara Lee captive, and this is not good because Barbara just basically is going to do whatever it takes to get to her daughter, and she puts the moves on Echo and really severely mortally injures Echo. And I love this because the interactions between her and Jay she knows that she's hurt badly, and you see Jay basically say, listen, you know, you've been my Echo, you're not my Echo anymore. And he ends her. He takes her life. And I think that's kind of to his character, but in a way, it's fitting because he's the one that takes her life rather than letting her suffer for that time and maybe bleed out. Where, you know, he took this person and shaped her into what she was. And so it's kind of fitting that he ends that person, ends that character. And even though she kind of, you can see maybe that, and there's not really a time for disappointment, but it just seems fitting. And it seems like something that she, as Echo, would appreciate, that he was the one who did it and not, having her die due to her enemy's wound. So, the relationships between these two has been just very interesting over the last two series. And so once again, we've seen this cult of Joker, and with her, this kind of cult of Harley.
Yeah.
So it was a very interesting way of closing out her portion of this story and opening it up to someone new down the road. But so Jeremiah gives Babs the instructions to send Jim to where I started. And Jim arrives and finds out that this is the case. And he makes this promise to Babs that he is going to make sure Barbara Lee is okay. And I really appreciate just the interaction between the two of them there, the depth of caring, of knowing that they have this daughter together and they're both looking out for her 100%.
Right. Well, and it's not just that Barbara Lee is part of the greater mythos. It's really easy for TV series to kind of dismiss a child in this regard.
Right.
And it's easy for them to kind of work around it so that you don't really see them and that kind of a thing. But what I love is that they went in depth with this. I mean, I felt the family relationship, obviously you did too, in every single aspect of this. And so there's nothing like I felt like she was being used as a tool, even though she was.
Mm-hmm.
It, from a storytelling standpoint, it wasn't this, okay, you know, we got to save the kid. I felt the greater peril here between Jim and Barbara, so because of their history, because of, you know, the moment out of the depths of despair that this child came from,
mm-hmm.
and just everything that was tied into this situation with Jeremiah, I felt was very, very well earned.
Yeah, and I agree, and I think even in their casting choice, the actress's name is, I'm sure I'm going to pronounce this right, but Jati Lawrence, they did a very good job of casting, you know, this child actor who doesn't have a ton of lines, but has to be so very expressive in the mm-hmm. scenes that she's in,
mm-hmm.
and to kind of express the love that she has for her parents and the peril that she's in because of Jeremiah. And I just really appreciated that. You have her being dangled over the vats of chemicals, and you have Jeremiah J hoping to get Bruce, and he gets Jim, and he's fine with that, but because he's creating this chaos and he is kind of has this back and forth with Jim, and you just see the pain on Jim's face of seeing his daughter in peril and having him, you know, he has to jump for the rope to make sure she doesn't fall in. And even in the midst of that, Jeremiah is stabbing him mm-hmm. so that, you know, but he is not flinching. He's holding on to his daughter. And I just love the peril and the back and the forth between the two in the dialogue in this scene of really having an exposition of who this character is. And he's not Jeremiah anymore. He's not yet who he's going to become. But you see the thinking that pushing of Barbara Lee into this tank is going to push him to the next level. And just the tension here is just so strong because we have had some inclinations that Jim is getting some help from somebody in this episode. it's been somebody in the shadows, but you know, it's a desperate time because Jim doesn't know how to get in contact with this person, doesn't know if this person's going to show up, and he's trying to figure out how he's going to save his daughter, and he's powerless now. He's got the rope, and he's got being stabbed, and he's got no way to save her. He's got no power. And guess who comes in?
Batarang through the hand.
Oh, I was so much yes about this. So much yes. This was so good. I loved the whole introduction of Bruce as Batman in this episode because he is being that detective. We see earlier that he has traced down these explosives and he is not going to let Jim and Harper get blown up. So he kind of distracts them away from the bodies and gives them the heads up about the bodies. And, you know, he's out the window and he's been in the shadows this whole episode, but he has to save from the shadows. You know, he's still not like directly confronting face to face Jeremiah, but he is making sure that Jim and Barbara Lee are safe. And I just loved it. It's such a Batman character because he knows how much he has to reveal himself and how much he doesn't. And I really appreciated it.
Yeah, the writing here was superb. Mm-hmm. And for all of the non-Batman that the series had to do, the little bit that we got was perfection. Yeah.
Yeah, I really appreciate it. So we have a batarang through the hand and one to the head that takes Jeremiah out, and yeah. Barbara Lee is saved. We've got this family reunion there, and so things are on the up and up there. And so this really, I think this kind of solidifies in Jim's mind that while was tired and weary of doing things alone, he knows he's not alone anymore. Mm-hmm. And he knows that this figure, he doesn't know the name yet, but this figure is there to help him out and take some of that weight that he has borne this entire series. Right. And he comes to the decision there on the rooftop of breaking out the spotlight of talking with Harvey and Alfred that, you know, he's not going to step down because he's got this friend who's going to bear some of the weight.
Well, and as opposed to, and the more I think about this, as far the introduction to Penguin and Riddler was so much Batman 66. Mm-hmm. And I love that they went there as well, because that whole sequence of them, you know, getting waylaid, you know, by him and everything like that, and the two of them together, you know, shaking with fear as they see him go
maybe
over
tomorrow.
The sky and all that. Yeah, it was so Burgess Meredith and Frank Gorshin. Mm-hmm. It was fantastic because you had the ability to make that nod to the history as well, and it still fit within the series of Gotham. Mm-hmm. But it was, I don't know, I really, really loved that they went there and had that little bit of camp as far as how those two reacted to him, as opposed to the seriousness and the dark and everything that Catwoman, and we'll talk about her in a sec, that Catwoman and Jim and Harvey and Alfred had to him.
Yeah.
It was a brilliant mixture.
Right. I appreciate that because they have walked this line of this incredibly rich lore of the comics of Batman, the animated series, of the Nolan films, of taking all these characters and really fleshing it out to say, well, this holds true to this entire canon.
Yeah.
And where you get this interaction of where Jim is kind of a mixture of the Gordon that we see in the animated series and a mixture of the Gordon that we see in the Nolan films. I like the departure that they made of Bullock not being necessarily the character that we saw in Batman, the animated series. So I agree with what you're saying is they could bring all these characters in and shine a light on the past and say, yes, this all could be in canon with each other. And
yes.
I really appreciated that of how they worked all those little things in together, because kind of getting into the Bat family, we have the acknowledgement that both Lucius and Alfred have been aware of Bruce being back in town, mm-hmm. and not only knowing that he is playing this role in the town of being stepping up and being Gotham's defender, but joining in that to aiding him in that. I just really appreciated that little scene of the two of them acknowledging their role and enabling Bruce to be this hero. And I just the teamwork of the two of them working together to help Bruce, I just appreciated that that interaction. And that was another thing that I just missed about not having a 2-hour episode, of really getting to see, and that's been my complaint about this series, of not getting to see Chris play more of Lucius. Because what we saw of him was great. And when he was on screen, he just did a wonderful job of playing Lucius Fox. And but of seeing him behind the scenes on Twitter and other areas, he's just a very fun actor, and you can tell he enjoys the role. And I just would have liked to see a little more of what he's been doing in this 10 years. And, you know, is he involved with Wayne Industries again, or is he still with the police department? I would have liked to see more, but I really did enjoy that scene between the two of them.
Yeah, no, I agree. I agree totally. So let's dig into Selena a little bit.
Yes, let's.
I was not happy at all that they were going to replace her, and Carmen Bicandova put herself out there on Twitter that this was her decision, or at least part of it, and to bring in
Lily.
And my, part of my point in that was I was pretty sure they weren't going to leave David Messeuse behind, but the way they were able to play that was that David had the 30 seconds that he had in the beginning of the episode, and that was it. And we never had to see Bruce as an adult.
Right.
Because he was always Batman. So again, I felt, and I don't know if this is just a loyalty to Carmen. I don't know if it's, again, 2 hours would have done a world of wonder in this area, I think, as well, to flesh more out, you know, who this adult Selena is, because a little bit of dialogue here and there, and yes, the amazing scene where she comes in and cats her way to the to the rock and everything. I mean, it was fantastic, but I felt just shortchanged in a really, really big way. And the ultimate scene of her and Batman exchanging their pent up feelings for the past 10 years. I don't know. It felt short to me. So my expectations were so high because of what they've developed in this series. I mean, they did it. They built this up to be this amazing thing. And I just felt like the wrap up couldn't meet those expectations.
Yeah, I think the actress did in her part, she did a good job of playing a character. I mean, of learning who Carmen was and as a character, and playing the continuation of that character. And I don't fault her for what she played on screen and having to walk out that scene that we see of the start of the true Batman and Catwoman interaction, of this back and forth of the relationship that they're going to have. And the points that you brought up are extremely valid. I think, and we can play what if all we want. I mean, if we had gotten a 2-hour season finale, maybe we could have gotten a kind of like what we saw with Bruce at the beginning, of him going on his journey. We could have got a Selena making those steps into society and stepping up into society and becoming this socialite, and see one of those transformations where you hold on somebody's face and then you you have this effect where you go into the other actress's face, you know, where we get to see, or even flashbacks of getting to see some thoughts about things, and then you see a flashback, and I would not have faulted that. That would have seemed a little more natural to me, because, like you said, we heard a voice modulated David in the bat suit. It was a different actor in the suit, but we got to hear his voice, and that made sense because you could put him behind that mask.
Right.
Whereas the Catwoman mask does not lend itself to cover as much most of these. Now, if you went like Batman 66, then maybe you could, but I don't think that would have worked. But that's another reason I came down, is I would have liked to see just more of her time during this era, and given just a little more depth. Because if you had that interaction and that flashback, or, you know, that in between, and then you've got this character introduced and you get to see her play that scene of stealing the diamond, of that scene of foiling the Riddler, and this interaction between Batman and Catwoman, the weight would have been there a little bit more, because we would have seen the transition to give a little more impact. And, you know, I hate it, but like I said, I think that final scene did tee things off well, and I think they did a good job with the writing in that scene of keeping it emotional and tied to this past that these two characters have had, and yet kicking off this playful back and forth between each other that's going to continue. So I enjoyed that. I just think it would have been even more powerful if we had had this more in between.
Yeah, totally.
All right. Anything that we kind of missed or we didn't cover?
No, I think that's got it. A fantastic, fantastic episode that my only fault is I wish there could have been more.
Yeah, so, I agree. All right. Well, it is time to get into some feedback. And Gotta play both. All right, kicking it off, we have some feedback from Spider-Gwen Loves Miles Morales. And here it goes. Gotham is over. Long live Gotham. I would have preferred a little more Batman, but this was not supposed to be a Batman show. The highlight of the episode was Batman when Batman told Selina to return the diamond and she flirtatiously declined. The one scene implied years of a cat and mouse / bat love affair. Yeah, agreed. The romantic relationships are an expected and important part of the storytelling. Not everyone's story is told. Yeah, we kind of got into that. Considering the era in which Gotham's source material was created, it's not surprising that most of Gotham's characters of an importance are Caucasian. I appreciate that Haller created Fish Movie and Tabitha Gallivant, two complex characters of African descent. Renee Montoya, a Latina, was underutilized. Valerie Vale, of Asian descent, had potential, but disappeared after a 6-episode arc. Not the best representation of women of color, but they did well juxtaposed to the minority males on the series. B.D. Wong's Hugo Strange was memorable, but one note. And I kind of would disagree with you there, but I see what you're going at here, Spider-Gwen. The second Asian male on the show, an unnamed jerk that came on to Vale, but only to be put in his place by Gordon. The emasculated Asian male is a common stereotype. This also feeds into the Asian women prefer white men over Asian men trope. Crispus Allen appeared in some blink and you miss it scenes. Lucius Fox's role grew as the series progressed, but we learned little of his personal life. For all their differences, what do these men have in common? Unlike their white counterparts, they had zero love interests. No hint that a woman might find them desirable. Yeah, I agree with what you're saying there. And I love this breakdown that some of these characters really could have been fleshed out more and given more than just kind of a one-note thing. And I appreciate what you're getting into here. Gotham hinted that Alfred, Butch, and Harvey had sexual interest in fish. The only time that Lucius appeared to have libido was when he was basically drugged by Ivy. Gotham's strength was not only in showing how almost every character on the show was bat crap crazy, but that those same borderline people were capable of empathy, loyalty, being loved, and loving. Unless you were a male. You were a male and not white. Ooh. Heller can create a world where a guy can swing from the rooftops without pulling his arms out of the socket, but not one which a non-white male has a lover. Oh, wow. Yeah, I can really see what you're saying here, Spider-Gwen, and I can see that how that these things can be complaints, and I appreciate that you bringing those things to the forefront.
Yeah, definitely. Thank you, Spider-Gwen. I'm a little bit sad that these were your impressions, you know, coming away from the series, but not to back away from your points at all. I think you're totally in the right to point these things out. So hopefully one day when we go back and reappreciate the series, we can, you know, pull out some things that maybe they did do really, really well.
Yeah. Next up, we have some feedback from Facebook from Todd Schwartzberg. Todd says, "Well, I think that Cobblepot and Riddler were great together, but I loved Jeremiah. Jack. No, John or Jay. Perfect portrayal. Also, I know the show is going for a Nolan-esque Dark Knight feel, but seeing Wayne Tower is very Burton era Batman." Yeah. "Did anyone see Ivy in there at all?"
That's my bad. And I really thought she was in the final, but yeah. Apparently I was wrong.
Yeah. So sorry about that. When Velasquez shoots Babs, was that supposed to be the shot that turns her into Oracle or at least paralyzes her? Or does that come later? Well, stepping in here, the person that got shot is young Barbara Gordon, that takes her from being Batgirl / Batwoman into being Oracle, not this character of Babs. So that's where we go there. But I'm sure this is maybe an homage to that, because that was the Joker who did shoot Barbara in the comics, in the Epic Killing Joke series. And so this is probably just an homage there. Speaking of later, I want this 10 years later, year zero, or is it year one, to continue with these actors. That would be nice, but I don't think it's going to happen. When Bruce went away, was that meant to be Nanda Parbat or Leon Yu? Winky face. Yeah, I don't know. Because that's kind of left up in the air, because he's kind of burned the bridges with the league, unless it's a different offshoot of the league. We really don't know in this universe who gave Bruce that extra training that we see him get in the comics. So that's another one of those things that we missed out with not having a 2-hour season finale.
I like the idea of Leon Yu and Bruce and Oliver, you know, kind of training at the same time.
Yeah. So. Side note, that Pennyworth trailer didn't really get me excited for the show, but I'll probably still watch. Okay, now you go, smiley face. And we'll talk about Pennyworth a little later. But thank you, Todd, for your feedback.
All right, we have the Huntress, Diana, a.k.a. Bianca. It's bittersweet to say goodbye to Gotham as its second superhero/comic book genre show that I also watch with my husband. The other one was Heroes. I've not sent in feedback until now because I never watched live. My husband hates commercials, and we usually ended up 3-4 weeks behind the most current episode. So now that we're at the end, we've actually watched the last episode only 3 days late. I've truly enjoyed the show and loved all the nods and the Easter eggs we've gotten over the seasons. This ending chapter was not something I enjoyed so much as I would have liked. My main irritations. We only got a mustache for Jim for 5 minutes. Boo. No Bruce aside from him arriving at what I assume to be Nanda Parbat at the start of the episode. And grown Selena was not something I liked at all. I just wish we could have kept Carmen. Not to be negative, here were my favorite things. Catwoman's suit. Batman's suit. Oswald really liked his penguin look. Edward loved his Riddler look. Loved it. Lucius and Alfred, partners in crime for Bruce. My rating for the episode, 7 batless bat signals. My rating for the entire series, 8.5 lights in the darkness. Hope to catch you for Batwoman next year. Signed off, Bianca.
Yes, indeed. Thank you so much. Yeah, that was great. And it's been great. Bianca is kind of one of my partners in crime in the GSM show's live threads on the mm-hmm. Facebook groups. She and I are kind of back and forth with Supergirl and Arrow and Flash and Legends and things like that. And so it's great. I appreciate that she and her husband watch this show together, and it was great that she could get us some feedback in for the series finale.
Absolutely. All right, we also have John Parrish. John says, what a fantastic way to end the show. Last week's episode was pretty weak, in my opinion, so I was a little worried, but they did a great job bringing it to a close. The actress that took over the role of Catwoman was amazing. She even delivered lines like her.
Yeah.
All right, John.
Yeah. I agree that she did. It seemed like she did do the vocal styling. So, yeah, I appreciate what you're saying there.
Yeah. Sorry you didn't enjoy the episode 11. We really, really, really liked it. So, yeah. But that's okay. Different strokes.
Yep. So we're just going to take a pause here. We did get some feedback from Harley, but Harley has been playing catch up. She's a busy person, you know, being a supervillain and also kind of keeping things going over there on Tomorrow's Legends. Her feedback she wasn't able to get the season, you know, the last episode of the season watched before our deadline, but she did give a kind of a wrap up of her thoughts on the season up until that point. And we're going to save that for our series wrap up episode. So be sure to tune in for that. But this is just a reminder to get your feedback in for that. And we'll let you know a little bit more about that a little later.
All right, let's turn over to Chris from New York State. Hello, fellow Gothamites. I'm sending in typed feedback rather than audio because I'm getting a cold. Allergies, honestly, not sure which. That time of year. So I hope it's okay. Absolutely, it's okay. I want to share some thoughts on the last couple of episodes of Gotham. As a passionate Batcat shipper, I'm not too happy with the animosity that was left between Bruce and Selina. But as disappointed as I am by that, I'm also not surprised because that is unfortunately classic Batman and Catwoman. I certainly wasn't expecting some fairy tale happy ending for them like we got to see for Jim and Lee, as nice as that would have been. I was also disappointed with the change of actress, even though I totally understand why it was done since 10 years had passed. It was difficult for me to see her as Selina. Even though she looks somewhat similar, Her voice and her mannerisms were totally different, and I therefore found that scene between her and Bruce to be a lot less impactful than it could have been if it had been Carmen in that scene. I totally think that with the right makeup, Carmen would have billed off being in her late 20s, and I definitely would have preferred that. While on the subject of Selena, I also want to say that I'm disappointed that she wasn't really wearing a Catwoman costume, leading me to think that this Selena Kyle is perhaps more akin to Anne Hathaway's Selena Kyle, since, if memory serves me correctly, Anne Hathaway's Selena Kyle was never actually identified as Catwoman.
Mm-hmm.
That's a great point, Chris. Yeah. I don't know that she ever was, because Jeff and I both just watched The Dark Knight Rises here recently.
Yeah.
So I don't think she ever is identified that way.
Nope.
I can't say that I'm all that thrilled with the Batsuit. Maybe one reason I'm disappointed is that I was expecting something grander, considering the fact that we didn't get to see it until the very end of the episode. But hey, this is still Batman in his infancy, so the suit will likely improve over time, even though we unfortunately won't get to see it. Did anyone else get that vibe that Jim, when he says a friend, totally knows that it's Bruce? That is absolutely the vibe that I got. Yeah, Chris, I agree with that.
Yep.
I'm pleasantly surprised that Barbara, as in Keen, not Barbara Lee, made it out of the series alive. I, for years, in fact, thought for sure that the story would end with a hero's death, and that would be why Jim would name his daughter after her as a way of honoring her mother and her sacrifice. But that, of course, isn't what we get. I've pretty much always loved Barbara, so I'm glad that this isn't what happened. But it totally defied my expectations. I will admit, however, that Barbara naming the baby after herself felt a bit strange and anticlimactic. I'm more in the end of Gotham, but I'm grateful that we got 5 seasons as a proper ending. This cast has been so wonderful and entertaining to watch, and they gave life to characters such as Penguin, Riddler, and Alfred in ways that I have never seen before. Sean Pertwee will be forever my Alfred, in fact. Mine too. I will miss the wacky and over-the-top storylines. I can't tell you how many times I watched this series with an affectionate sigh and said, only in Gotham. The complex and interesting characters, the plot twists, and, well, everything. Gotham was such a fun ride, and I thank it for 5 fun years. And I thank you, Gotham Undercover, for your podcast. Tomorrow. Christopher from New York State.
Thank you for your thoughts. Yeah, it's so fun. It's been a great ride, and I appreciate what they did, and I loved your insights as a longtime fan into the back and the forth. And it was good stuff. Good stuff. All right, settle in, folks. We've got some feedback from Martin the Flash, and this is not just about the season finale. It's a long ride about the end of the whole series, the last few episodes, I believe. So settle in. Here we go.
Gotham Undercover. This is Martin the Flash. Oh, man, it's a bit of a sad day. It's a bit of a sad TV season. I mean, Arrow got canceled and you guys were going down, hopefully with a bang. It's, a lot of emotions, man. We're losing some good TV shows and we got to move on to other projects, so tough, tough day. But I just had a couple of things I wanted to get into you guys because I owed you some feedback, and I told you I would. A couple of things I just wanted to say way back from, I think, 3 episodes ago. I had a few thoughts about Bane because before he got introduced, we were all really unsure about him because we got the pictures released of how he looked and we all kind of scoffed at that. I am very 50-50 on him. I still did not like his look. I did not like the story they gave him as to how he became Bane, but I appreciated what they did with him. With him being kind of psychotic, a bit of a maniac, and losing control, where he just, once he gets into a rage, he doesn't care. He has no remorse. He hurts, he maims, and he enjoys it. And the strength, I mean, that was Bane to me. It's just the look. I love the classic wrestler mask, great big giant muscular guy, you know, with the leather pants and the big boots. That's the Bane that I still picture. So it was still hard to accept their take on him for Gotham this season. But, you know, That's okay. Now, the other character that they introduced a couple episodes ago was Gotham's version of Nyssa. It's so, so hard to not want to compare it to Nyssa from Arrow, because that, to me, is Nyssa. So this version, I think it was the actress herself, just a little bit flat. I mean, to bring in a character like that right at the show's ending, when they could have maybe developed her over a season story arc or something, might have given her more time to develop the role, because I just couldn't get into her performance. It was just, it was a little bit laughable, which was unfortunate. Another character I wanted to ask you guys about was Hugo. What do you guys think about this idea that a scientist, a mad scientist, is actually the one creating most of the Batman rogue gallery here? That's a different take. I don't think that's how any of them ever originated in the comics or cartoons even. I don't recall there ever being a mad scientist doing anything like this. I mean, what an interesting take for a TV show to take. I don't mind it, because on a show that's supposed to be at least somewhat based in reality, you know, at least a grounded series compared to some of the other superhero shows, it kind of makes sense, I guess, to have a mad scientist experimenting on people and creating all these concoctions of villains and bad guys. So yeah, I didn't mind. I was just curious what you guys thought of that, because it's very different. Now, there was one moment a couple episodes ago with Bane when he picked up Alfred and threw him against that concrete pillar, which looked like it broke his back, pretty much broke him in half. I have to say, that is probably the biggest jaw-dropping, breathtaking moment in all five seasons of Gotham. That one shocked me. That one hurt to watch, and I really didn't know what the show was doing, if they were also rewriting Alfred's story, that this was his end and Batman goes on without him. I had no idea. That blew me away when they did that. Now, Jeff, I know I talked to you briefly on Facebook Messenger about the second last episode. You already know that I'm not kind to that one. I did not take a liking to it. It felt rushed. It felt everything squeezed in, too much of it, and nothing really gelled or flowed for me. And I think part of it too was Penguin and the Riddler. For some reason, in this one episode, they overacted, especially when they were talking to their own reflections in the mirrors and stuff, and trying to pump each other up as to how bad they were. It was too much. I mean, yeah, they're already ridiculous characters, but I don't know. There's something about that scene and their that whole episode with them that was beyond over the top, and that just it bugged me a little bit, I have to be honest. I also you made a couple points, I think, on the podcast about Bruce leaving so young. But I guess in a way it kind of makes sense, because he's getting away from everything that's going on here. You know, it, being at the age he's at, he can't maybe deal with it. He realizes he can't handle the situation because he is too young. He doesn't have enough experience. He's not big enough, strong enough, wise enough yet. But also, if he's gone for 10 years, that allows him to grow, allows him to age, allows him to bulk up, get the training he needs to come back and be able to deal justice. So for the Gotham storyline, it makes sense to me that he left so young. And then the other thing is bringing Ra's al Ghul into this storyline kind of takes away from the one angle that Batman learned from the League of Assassins, learned all his training, learned all his skill. That's why he fights like them. But bringing Ra's al Ghul into the show this early on in Bruce Wayne's life, it really kind of takes that away as a possibility. So I'm curious where you guys think he got his training. Now, the one thing that has been bugging me is the baby stuff. I wish they had just ended the show with Barbara being pregnant and deciding to name the girl Barbara. I appreciate the show wanting to introduce Batgirl and, you know, have that connection there that this is Barbara Gordon. I don't like when TV shows bring babies in them. It ruins the show, it ruins the storylines, it ruins the plot. Especially some of the wacky scenes they had with Barbara running around with baby in hand and shooting guns and, I don't know, just all kinds of crazy stuff. I don't like babies on TV shows. It changes things too much. One other thing I wanted to say before I move on to the finale is I'm feeling unsure of what the show did with its five-season story arc. It initially was supposed to be about James Gordon and his rise to becoming the commissioner and, you know, what Gotham was like before Batman was ever here. But the show really transitioned and became more about Bruce and his rise to wanting to become Batman. And Gordon kind of fell away to secondary storylines and background storylines. And I, what do you guys think about that? Because I'm unsure if the show would have been better if they stuck with Gordon being the focus, or did the show get better because they started telling us more about Bruce and Alfred's story, which we all love. We all love the connection those two had. And maybe that's why they went that way, because they saw, the writers saw what was happening with the actors. I don't know. Just curious, guys. Anyway, I want to just say for the finale, I actually was happy the way they ended it. All the characters fell into place. They all fell into their roles. I loved seeing the Penguin and the Riddler finally get to become their true selves and walk down the street hand in hand, basically, and like, we're going to take this city. It's ours. And I just love seeing them become that. And I loved having the Joker back in here. This is probably the most psychotic, sadistic looking version of Joker ever. I wish they had spent more time on him these last 5-6 episodes and made it like a little mini arc and really focus on the Joker and his development and more of what he can do. I really wish that's the only thing I was missing. But I think they ended it well. Having used the same actor to play the 10 years older version of him, it looked cool for him to be in the bat suit. I'm sure it was an awesome feeling for the actor to get to do that, get to see himself in the bat suit, but you could still see his face was way too young for it. But, you know, whatever. It was still cool. Oh, and to just add on to that, I understand how upset you guys were with the cat. Woman actress not finishing it off and not coming back for the big finale after a show gave her a wonderful career for 5 years. I do feel with you guys. I understand and totally agree. That would bother me big time. It'd be like Oliver Queen stepping out saying, no, you know what? I'm not going to do the last episode. Get another actor to play the role. You just can't. But I have to say, the actress that they got to fill in to play the grown-up Catwoman, wow, she could have played the role from the very beginning. She was fantastic. If they continue anything with this show or move into a movie or I have no idea what, she definitely could be Catwoman. She had the move, she had the look, and she definitely had the acting skills. So I was quite happy. I think her name was Lily or something. I enjoyed that. Anyway, guys, I think I rambled on long enough. I just thought it's your finale episode. I'll try to get in some thoughts covering the last 3 episodes. Farewell to Gotham, off into the, I guess it's not really sunset in Gotham, off into the shadows we go, and on to new projects for you guys. So, good luck with everything. This is Martin the Flash, and I'm out.
Yeah, Martin, you bring up some great points. I really, when the series was announced, I was kind of unsure of how it's going to be, because they did put it in the light of being about the GCPD and about Jim. And it kind of needed to shift as we go along into focusing more on Bruce as he grew. And I appreciated, and it was still really centered around the GCPD, but I think it progressed well in growing into what it needed to be in a way that felt fairly organic in my mind.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, it's the same thing of what you were saying earlier, that what we got to experience was this time when Jim had to step into that role of Gotham's defender at all cost. And now, 10 years later, he doesn't need to do that anymore. He can work in cooperatively with Batman and so on and so forth. So as we transition away from Jim, and I don't really think we saw that transition away until the penultimate episode. Like I felt like the focus was squarely on him up until that point. I really do. And certainly we've watched Bruce, you know, come along in his hero's journey of, you know, starting to figure things out, and these pieces that they were able to bring with the Batcave and with Alfred, you know, becoming this teacher of, you know, fighting skills and the street smarts and all that. I mean, all those things, I think, led us up to the point where we were ready to take on Bruce as preparing himself for this. Mm-hmm. The one thing, Martin, that I will agree with you up and down all day long is that I feel like bringing in Roz and Nissa Al Ghul, I don't agree with. I don't think that that served this story very well, because it did. It left one of Batman's hugest influences out on the table too early.
Yeah.
And for him to, I understand Bruce needed to battle a demon to get across what it was that they wanted him to grow into and all that. I wish we had found another way. So
yeah. Yeah, I agree. And it really throws monkey wrenches. I mean, we've always said that Gotham is an Elseworlds tale, meaning things are not exactly the same as the canon.
Yeah.
But, you know, it did leave us hanging of how did he get training, queuing up the relationships with the Al Ghul family that Batman has. So, yeah, I really agree with what you're saying there. And to your point about Hugo, Hugo is in the comics, but not nearly the Victor Frankenstein character that he is here. I think they just looked at what they had and used that as a storytelling device, and BD just ran with it and did a great job at playing it to the camp that it deserves.
Solomon Grundy. Alrighty.
All right. Next up, we have some feedback from Chris, and he kind of gives his in the story progression of his thoughts like he always does. And so it's great to finish up the series with these thoughts. He starts, "Wait a second. This is not directed at Richard Kine, but how is he still the mayor after 10 years?
He always finds his way back.
Yep. Fiery red hair looks good on Babs. Okay, it cracked me up the way the Riddler snapped, "Hey," at the prison guard for hitting the cage with his billy club. Well, the Riddler has perfected his laugh over 10 years, that's for sure. Definitely shades of Frank Gorshin. Yeah. Oh my. Jeremiah taken by a woman in red and black nurse's outfit. Whoever could that be? ? I'm not sure how the change of actors for Catwoman went over with the fans, but to me, based only on the intro, it was pretty seamless. The hair sold it. I loved how 5 seasons of slow buildup paid off in one scene with Oswald putting on the hat. Yeah, that was great. To quote Maxwell Smart, the old C4 under the table trick. Well, I guess it that wasn't Harley Quinn. Not quite. Loved how Jeremiah pulled off the whole scene without saying the J word. Tomorrow. I thought the ending was perfect. Now on to Cobra Kai. Batmobile keys. It would be kind of cliche to give them to Jeremiah. So for this episode, I gave them to everyone in front or behind the camera who has done anything on the show for 5 seasons, Chris. And Chris, I wholeheartedly agree with you on that. Yeah, that, you know, it's been a long road, but they've had a lot of great staff who worked hard over those 5 seasons, both actors and directors, showrunners, writers. I so, you know, heartily agree with you on that.
Yep, 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 yep. Thank you, Chris.
This would not be a feedback section if we didn't close it out with some thoughts from our very own eye in the sky, Green Butterfly. So take it away.
Wow, that was amazing. Completely amazing. Hi, this is your Eye in the Sky Green Butterfly. I really, really, really loved this episode. It was like a movie. exactly like a Batman movie. So many great moments. So many great performances. Favorite funny moment? The Riddler yelling, "It's a callback!" And I really enjoyed the Catwoman scenes, even though our dear Carmen was not with us. And I still wish that she could have played this part. I still loved seeing Selena Kyle in the future. So many amazing performances. Who could possibly be getting the Batmobile keys? Well, everyone was completely amazing. But I'm not giving the keys to any of them. I want to give the Batmobile keys to you, Karen, Jep, and John, for doing such an amazing job leading us through all the stories that have taken place in this dark city leading up to the rise of the Dark Knight. Super excited to turn the page and start off on our next adventure with Kate Kane and Batwoman. 10 out of 10 villains that will deal with the man who dresses like a bat tomorrow. Have a super week. Green Butterfly out.
Oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much, Green Butterfly. We really appreciate and are honored with those Batmobile keys. And we do thank you for joining us for this ride, even though you had to hide your eyes a lot of the time because this is a little darker than the Green Butterfly likes.
Yep.
We appreciate your feedback and consistently keeping an eye on things in Gotham for us.
Thank you, Justina.
Yep. John, how about you tell us how people can get us info about their thoughts on the series as a whole?
Absolutely. We do want your feedback. As you look back on all five seasons of Gotham, you can call us at 304-837-2278 or go to our feedback site at goldenspiralmedia.com/feedback, where you can just type out your text, attach an audio file, or use the provided SpeakPipe widget. Follow the show on Twitter at GothamGSM, and to subscribe to any of our Golden Spiral Media Podcast Network shows in iTunes, simply go to goldenspiralmedia.com/Apple. And do pay attention to that Facebook group at facebook.com/groups/Gotham Undercover for more details about when they'll be able to put this recap episode together.
That's right. All right, and we've got some news. It has been fast and furious the last couple weeks with news about series related to either our producers or things in the universe. So there is a great TV Line article summarizing the finale along with a Q&A with the writer of the episode, John Stevens, and that will be linked in the blog post. He gives some real good thoughts about the episode and kind of closing things out, so check that out. Also, as was mentioned earlier, Pennyworth on Epix starts the last week of July, and this is a story of Alfred Pennyworth, former Special Forces officer, living in London and working for Bruce Wayne's father. And so the trailers are out there. There's some news about that. And once again, this is kind of created by some of our Gotham showrunners. So check that out this summer. I unfortunately don't have Epix, but I may check it when it comes out on other means.
Very good. We also have Metropolis. We also mentioned here at the top of the show, this will be a DC Universe streaming service either later this year or coming in 2020. And this will follow Lois Lane and Lex Luthor as they investigate the world of fringe science and expose the city's dark and bizarre secrets. Airing exclusively on that digital service, it promises to show us a wondrous and awe-inspiring city of tomorrow before the emergence of Superman, and establish much of the Man of Steel's world leading up to his arrival. This is interesting premise.
Yeah.
Working with Lois and Lex. this could be interesting.
Yeah.
I'll put in a quick plug since I come from the Supergirl side of things.
Oh, yeah.
I'll put in a quick plug for Krypton Season 2, mm-hmm. which starts June 12th on the Sci-Fi Channel. And really, really looking forward to where they're going with that series. I was a little bit hesitant on it the beginning of Season 1. But, mm-hmm. man, about halfway through Season 1, they turned it up a whole another level. And, yeah, can't wait to see where Season 2 takes us.
Indeed, indeed. I'm enjoying it as well. All right, Batwoman, we've had a ton of news in the last couple days. Mm-hmm. So because of the TV upfronts, the CW has announced that Batwoman will air on Sunday nights at 8 p.m. right before Supergirl. So we have a DC women hero block on our Sunday nights. And so this is interesting. I thought it was interesting that kind of like Gotham being an 8 o'clock show, where it'd make more sense to have it as a 9 o'clock show, but I, you know, and having a lead in from a lighter toned Supergirl, I don't know, but we'll see how that works out. But that's the plan. The new promo, which aired during the upfronts, is a several minute long promo, can be found in the blog post along with a TV Line article about Batwoman. And if we can get things worked out here behind the scenes at Golden Spiral Media, we hope to be covering this Batwoman series on Gotham Undercover in the fall. So just stay tuned to the Facebook group and we'll keep you informed on that. Listen, thanks to all of you for the wonderful feedback you gave us in this episode. Please be on the lookout for our series wrap coming up in the next couple weeks. We'll give you information about when the firm deadline for that is. I've got a busy week ahead of me, and we need Cougar to get healed up. So be on the lookout in the Facebook group for that info. And we'll get that out to you in the next couple weeks. But until then, this is Jeff, X-Force 11, signing out.
And John, a.k.a. The Silver Vox, also signing out. Thank you, Jeff, as always, for bringing me along with the ride.
Deeply appreciate it, and thank you for all your help this season.
Absolutely.